Welcome to the IDTNT podcast number 1104. I apologize. There was a little bit of like almost a two-week gap in between the last episode and this one that's going up because we shot the next season of The Wall in about that time. And we shoot them in about, a week and a half or so. The Wall's premiering January 4th. So yeah, our fourth season. It was really fun. But our days were really long, 12, 13 hours long. And, also longer because we were taking extra steps to be extra safe, very strict protocols in place as they should be, and just to make sure it was safe to shoot. But it was really fun to be back on a set and working and giving away money to nice people. And as you can probably hear, my voice is shot because I've literally been shouting for like a week and a half on The Wall. No, go in the million. No. Oh, get out of there. Oh, no. Oh, it turned red. Ah. So, and it was just like, aside from a couple Talking Dead, a handful of Talking Deads over the summer, I've literally not done anything. I have blisters on my feet from wearing shoes with the suits because I haven't worn suits in so long. Not complaining at all. Not complaining. Very thankful and fortunate to have been able to do this. But it was like a whole other gear to get back into. Super, super fun though. Again, January 4th, those are going to start premiering The Wall on NBC. But I'd love to, for the corkboard today, the community corkboard, ID10T, events at ID10T.com. An old friend of mine, Barry, and his friend Jason have a company called Barry and Jason Games, and they've made some really fun games, and they kickstarted an officially licensed Anchorman game. So he writes, it's a really funny game based on the moment in the movie where Ron Burgundy's teleprompter is sabotaged and he reads whatever's in front of him. So now it is your turn to sabotage a teleprompter with ridiculous magnetic words as your friends try to read through the news, without laughing. So, I highly recommend Anchorman, the game from my friends, Barry and Jason. They sent me one. Lydia and I have not had a chance to play it yet because I've been working, but we certainly will. And a fun Christmas present, Anchorman, the game. So you can just Google Anchorman, the game, or go on Amazon. It's on Amazon. You can get it there, as well. So, there it is. Congratulations to Barry and Jason for making a fun game to help distract people. All right, so this episode is Bryan Cranston, whom I looked up because I couldn't remember the first. I knew he was on the podcast early on, and I'm looking it up right now. First appearance on the podcast, August 25th, 2011. We had met, like a month or two before that. We both had done the Conan O'Brien show, and I was like, hey, man, I'm doing this thing. And we had a ton of fun on the show. And Bryan's so funny and riffy. And he's really an amazing comedy guy. I mean, sometimes people have to be reminded like, oh, yeah, before Breaking Bad, he was on Malcolm in the Middle. Like, and he'd done sitcoms for years. But he's just a great actor top to bottom overall. But also really funny and improv-y. And so we had a really great time. And I think I remember at the time kind of even explaining what a podcast was back in 2000. Oh, it's like a sort of like a radio show, but like for the internet. And it's just funny that we've come full circle with podcasts where, 10 years ago, almost 11, when we started doing this, we're still in the space where we'd have to explain what a podcast is. And now now I feel like all those people we would have explained to a podcast, they all have podcasts now. Listen, we were on the right track. It worked. And so he's been on several times throughout the years, and I got to do the Talking Bad after show for Breaking Bad, but I just adore him. He's just so sweet, but so funny, and just a really smart guy, and also really comfortable in his own skin, which is something that he's talked about on the podcast for years, and something I really admire. He just doesn't really get too worked up about any unnecessary things, and is very focused on what he wants to do, and just does things that he enjoys, and has a great family. And so I love you, Bryan Cranston. And he has a new show out, which is called Your Honor, which is on Showtime and looks amazing. Like when you see the premise for it, he explains it in a podcast, but if you watch a trailer for it, it's like, oh, This is going to be one of those ones where you're just on the edge of your seat the whole time. It looks really, really, really fantastic. So thank you to Bryan Cranston for coming back on and continuing to be a wonderful human being and friend here. Oh, and by the way, we recorded this about 6 weeks ago, I think. Six, 7 weeks ago. And I had just held it because this is around the time when Your Honor premiered a week ago. So there you go. Your Honor on Showtime. Bryan Cranston on this podcast. You on your device listening to this podcast. Me on this podcast saying, roll the thing.
Initiating ID10T protocol.
I'm, how are you, man?
I'm good. You're fine. Don't worry about it. I got no fucking place to go. We're in a, like, kind of a quarantine, so it's like, it's fine to be late now.
Well, I have to do this on my iPhone because I'm in New Orleans shooting a limited series, and I have no power. From the hurricane took out my power, so I've been trying to power up borrowing electricity from people.
In the midst of all that, you still came on to do this podcast. That is,
of course,
one of the reasons why I love you.
So I have my little power pack here that I'm gonna plug into my I gotta plug it in here. So all right.
So this podcast could be like 12 minutes long, right? As you go, you know, the thing that I've discovered about life that I life think is the most is, valuable. Yeah. Ah, fuck. Oh, my God. How long's your power been out?
Since Wednesday night.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Isn't that crazy?
Are you okay?
I am. I'm going to now turn you upside down so that my cord can...
That was like being on a roller coaster.
Am I right side up to you now?
You are. No. You're great. You're perfect.
I'll see. Now you look sideways to me. I'll have to do it sideways. How's that?
Yeah, that you look great. That looks great.
Okay. Okay.
Oh my gosh.
And how's the sound? Should I do anything? Should I get on my...
No, you're fine. Okay. We're just going to rip the audio from this, but it's just nice to see your face. It's
good. Thanks,
to,
bud. You too.
It's good to How are see you? Man, I was just flipping through like suggested Instagram videos the other day, and I saw this video. It was you holding you take the Walter White mask off and it's you underneath. And I go, "Oh, that's really funny." And then I hear this familiar voice and I go, "That sounds familiar." I go, "Wait, that's me. I moderated that panel." I completely forgot. It was like 8 years ago.
Yeah.
I'm just watching this go, "Oh my God, that's so fucking cool. Bryan Cranston's under that Walter White mask." And then I hear a voice go, "Hey, that's Cranston." I go, "What the? Oh, fuck, that's me." Like, I don't fucking know what's going on anymore.
Yeah. Well, this new world has got us spinning a little bit. Don't you feel that you're like a little spun out?
Spun out, you know? But I think it's also just getting older too, where it's like, it's just like, you only have so much RAM. There's only so much memory, you know, in the old computer. And sometimes it, you know, it just makes room for things. Oh my God. How long have you been in New Orleans?
Well, we started over a year ago to do this limited series for Showtime called Your Honor.
Oh yeah, I saw the trailer. It looks real stressful.
Yeah, it's very stressful. We need to add a little more stress to people's lives.
That's why it's fictionalized stress.
That's why we got to do it. It's a really good show, and we're excited about it. But we started last September of 2019. We got shut down in March, like everyone else, and I had COVID-19. So did my wife.
Oh my God.
Yeah. It was, we were, as it turns out, we were very lucky in that the symptoms were very mild. We had, you know, like body aches for 2 or 3 days, but not bad enough to keep you in bed. Just like, I just don't quite feel right. It's, I feel like I need to sleep more, and just total exhaustion. And then our senses of taste and smell went away for 3 months, and slowly it's been coming back. And so now my taste buds and my sense of smell are probably back 70%.
Oh my God. So you got it really early on.
In March, early March. Yeah.
And did you know right away, or did you find out afterwards that you had the antibodies? So you suspected that that's what it was.
I knew right away only because my wife, we have a doctor who lives across the street from us, and it was so early on, there weren't many people testing. And he said, well, you should take this test. Okay. And she did, and she had it. But we had been together for 10 days, and I thought, oh, well, if she's got it, then I've got it. And sure enough, a few days later, I started feeling the same symptoms that she had. And it was weird. So we shut down in New Orleans. We had about 2.5 episodes left to shoot. And so then 7 months later, as we all know, now we came back about 3 weeks ago to finish shooting. And we have had some false positives, but we're testing three times a week.
Yeah.
The entire cast and crew, and is very, very strict, and rightfully so. We've had some false positives, which is great that they're false, but it also delays us as far as our schedule is concerned, because they have to isolate people who tested initially positive, and until we confirm that they're not, it's like, oh my God.
Right.
So we're all trying to figure out the protocols and how to work within it. And so we actually work in shields. We have these shields that you wear around your neck that goes up, as opposed to the ones you wear around your head.
And yeah. Yeah.
Pass down so that it doesn't mark up our face or our hair, you know, for actors. Then we take the shield off and do the scene and cut shields. We put the shields back on.
That's why pets wear those cones too, so it doesn't mess up their makeup.
I know. That's exactly right. Yeah.
And so you don't so you don't chew your arm. They want you that you don't. You're not supposed to chew your arm either.
It was both, either makeup or chew your arm,
or chewing your arm. I can't believe, you know, this is like you, Tom Hanks. Like, you guys had it early on. Like, you and it seems like, was it scarier at that time because it was. Obviously, it's still a mysterious disease, but it was way more mysterious in March. So, was it stressful per se, or was it like, well, you know, I mean, we don't feel terrible, so I guess, you know, we'll just count our blessings there.
I think the ignorance is bliss scenario was more apropos because it wasn't widely known. Everyone was talking about it. It's coming, how severe it's going to be, how each individual reacts to it is going to be of question. So we just didn't know. And then when Robin went through it first and she seemed to manage okay, and then I got it, we kind of went through it. And despite the week-long feeling of absolute exhaustion and fatigue, then we were pretty much past it, with the exception of the taste buds and the sense of smell.
How long before you had a negative test again? Did you start testing regularly after that point? Because there really actually weren't a lot of tests available early on.
Yeah. Well, because CBS, which, you know, and Showtime, they wanted me to test to make sure that you know, because I was around a crew of 175 people. And so I did get in and test. And once I was shown that I was now negative, that was a good sign. And I started donating plasma because my antibodies were active. And so I did that at UCLA Medical Center and donating the plasma and, you know, doing what you can to try to see if you can help out. And, you know, this is so insidious, COVID-19, because it goes anywhere from even less symptoms than I had, being completely asymptomatic, all the way to death.
You don't know.
In between. You have no idea. And it doesn't matter. My assistant, a young woman who's 34 years old in a peak of health, had it much worse than I did.
Oh, wow.
Why? I'm in my 60s. She's in her 30s.
Right.
And she was bedridden. I have one of my agents, also a young guy in his late 30s. He told me, he said it felt like an elephant was compressed on his chest. He was struggling to get air.
God.
So it's wide range. You don't know. It's a spin of the wheel to find out how you would react to when you contract it. And so that's why just wear the mask. You know, we're in a world where just do it.
You know? Yeah, because I would say, like, it doesn't, you know, our feeling, my wife and I's feeling, and she is a little bit high of a risk because she has some kidney stuff that it, and so, you know, we've been extra careful, but also it's like, yeah, you might get it and it might be mild, but then the person that you could give it to, it might devastate them. So it's like, you know, like, you're just kind of hoping people realize that, yeah, it is about you, but it's also about the community. And it's also about not spreading it to other people and try to imagine that, you know?
I think there's a, I hate to say it, but I've been somewhat disappointed in humanity, as you know, American humanity, about not wearing the mask. You know, I always go for these long walks just to clear my head, and went for one the other day. And here in New Orleans, there's a place that a lot of the Tulane University kids go, and there's massive amounts of college age kids from Loyola and Tulane, and watching the sunset and playing Frisbee. And that's all great. Maybe three people out of the masses of people were wearing masks. Maybe three.
Man. Oh man.
And it's like, okay. All right. So yeah, nothing may happen to you. And I granted, was I the same way when I was, you know, late teens or early to? Absolutely. The thought of, I'm fine. I'm not going to catch this. I'm healthy. I'm great. And it's not going to happen. And you're right. And like you said, you could get it and nothing happens. But if you go visit your old aunt and uncle or your grandparents, that's not the same thing.
Yeah. I mean, so taking walks every day is how you've been kind of dealing, and sort of is that, because we got a dog in February and we had been taking him on evening walks. And as someone who's never taken evening walks before, I developed a real love for it because it's incredibly therapeutic.
It really is. It's and also getting back to the age things. Yes, you're aging, Chris. So
come on. No, that happens to other people.
Yeah.
It's not supposed to happen to me. I'm always 23 in my head, right? Isn't that how it works?
No. You know what? What the first thing is when, and it's going to hit you at some point. When you,
Brian Crenson's Guide to Aging. Yes.
You and your wife and your dog are going to go for a walk, and there's going to be some college kids walking by looking at you and your wife and dog, and they're going to go, oh, isn't that cute? See, they could stay in love forever. And, you know, and it's like, oh, my God.
And then inside, I'll just have this silent well of hatred for their youth. It's, you know, it's not their fault, but it's just like, don't even look at us. God damn it.
In my day.
Yeah, we're already doing that because we've already, you know, we have had the same experience where we'll just like drive by a park and there's just people and I'm like, no one's wearing fucking masks. What's happening? You know, just like have that that old person meltdown.
Yeah.
You want to shout out the window and go, dude, what are you doing? You know, get off my lawn, but then also put a mask on as you're getting off my lawn.
That's right.
Put the mask on as you're getting off.
Mask on while you're getting off my lawn. And pick up that dog poop.
Bring an extra mask, scoop up the poop, use the empty mask on your face. Yeah, I don't know, man. I'm so glad you're okay, and I'm so glad. And you look great. You look incredibly healthy. You know, it's you somehow it looks like you're aging backwards, because I remember you were on the podcast maybe 8 or 9 years ago, and you were talking about, like, you go, yeah, you know, I used to ride around the motorcycle all the time, and I never wore sunscreen or anything, and I got all this crag now, and that's all gone. You look great. What are you doing? Are you moisturizing? Are you eating more vegetables? I need secrets.
Chris, I've looked this way for 20 years and I'm finally looking my age. It's like,
I don't think you are.
Listen, don't piss me off. Okay.
Oh shit.
I will come after you.
I'm on my phone. I don't have power. I had COVID a few months ago. I'm not in the fucking mood.
Yeah. Leave me alone. No, man, you're a sweetheart to say that. No, you're just trying to be better to yourself. You know, you realize your body's going to change. Your metabolism changes. You know, I never before had to think about diet and weight and what to eat, when to eat, how to eat. Now I do. It's like, you got to. It's, you know, if you want to feel good, you have to be more restrictive. Whereas when we were in our 20s, man, you could do anything you want.
And yeah, you're fucking Wolverine.
Back. Yeah, man. It's like it was great. And you think it's always going to be that way. And it is not going to always be that way.
No.
So, I mean, no. But yeah, I pour the moisturizer on. I drink lots and lots of water. Water. Yeah.
Water's good. A little bit of moisturizer is always good. And then also, like, I really do think stress is the, alcohol, drugs, and smoking age the fuck out of people. But if you don't do those things, stress is all. And so I'm always trying to figure out, like, how to not stress and how to not stress in a world that is basically just running on gallons of stress at the moment. It's like, how do you, you know, I guess it is just take the evening walks or, you know, do some breathing or just try to disconnect a bit. I don't know.
Well, you know, you never thought that you needed avenues to de-stress, but you've discovered that too. Going on a walk is just so peaceful and calm, and it stimulates the blood system and it's also social, that you're with your wife, your dog, and you're going, and it's just, you realize this is great. You know what, the other thing, back in the day when you're trying to find a place, I love the GPS now. When you can just go punch in the address, here you go, directions, go.
Yeah.
It says, so for the first time, you can actually just drive, and it says, in a half a mile, turn left. It's like, okay, I think I will.
All right, robot.
Whereas before, you're going, what's the street name? Can you see the street? Where is that? I don't know. Oh, turn right. You know, and getting out the Thomas guy.
The Thomas guy. Okay, you know, turn to page 128. That's in G5 grid. Okay, that goes. Oh, there's cold water. Fuck, I don't know where.
That's right. And it goes, you got to, this continues on page 360.
Wait, which San Vicente is this? Oh, no, that's the San Vicente that's in Beverly Hills. Yeah. Fuck, I don't know where the fuck I am.
Yeah, and it's stressful. And any time that you can find avenues to de-stress, man, like a massage, or even I took a bath the other night and it was like, I'm pitch dark.
Yeah.
There's no electricity in my house. And so I just ran a hot bath, lit a candle, and just sat in the bath going, this is fantastic.
You were remembering your spirit, Oprah Winfrey style is what you were doing. You were having a,
there you go. Oh, yeah, it's funny you should say that, because Oprah was in the bath with me.
Oh, that's really interesting. And she was reading to you from the book club.
Yes. Now, I got to tell you, if you took the physical sexuality out of it completely, that would be an interesting way to spend an hour.
I honestly didn't see it in a dirty way at all. I just saw it as like, oh, they're just like, you know, they're like siblings, like 5-year-old siblings taking a bath. They're just like, there's like a, there's bath toys and they're, you know, having shampoo fights and, you know, I'm ready to come out now.
Farting.
Yeah, there's an underwater fart war. Yeah, of course. Yeah, all those things.
That goes without saying. That's the headline to the podcast.
Someone's going to take that literally. Bryan Cranston takes a bath. No, it's a bit. We're just bits. By the way, speaking of bits,
I'll take it.
I love the bit that you and Aaron Paul did on with the robots. Just going up to going up to random people with the robots, and then like they had the tablet with your faces, just telling people happy birthday.
That was for our mezcal Dos Hombres and the delivery service Drizzly that we got together with, and we were actually in our homes. So it was very COVID friendly, and from our standpoint, we were in our homes and we were operating the robots. Truly from our computers.
Yeah.
The arrows. And we were like, we could turn it one way or the other. We could raise the thing to get taller or lower, and we can go forward, backwards. It was really a lot of fun. It was like a video game that came to life. And so I think we're going to do some more of those, but it was fun just to surprise people and give them a bottle of Dos Hombres for their birthdays. And this has been a hell of a year. It's been, you know, everybody's stressed out like you're talking about and worried about the election and COVID. And it's been very dehumanizing to this year in many, many ways, and uncivil and crude and unkind in so many other ways. It feels like, you know, I can't wait for this to get over so that we can live again.
Well, and I think, you know, just hearing all the things that you've done, it's like, well, what can you do? You donate platelets because you want to help people because you had COVID, you know, like you send these robots out, you know, like you try to cheer people up just to make them feel better. You know, it's like those are the things. And those are the kind of Bryan Cranston things that I would expect that you would do. You know, it's like, well, I'll just see if I can make, because I remember when the very first time you were on the podcast, I'd thought I had really hit a wellspring of talking to performers and hitting the, like, you know, let's talk about all your insecurities and let's really unearth. And you go, you know, I'm fine. You know, like, I knew I wanted to act. If there wasn't really a backup plan. I was happy just living in an apartment and being a working, like, there wasn't any of that underneath. And I'm like, God damn, how do we bottle Cranston? Like, how do we just like squeeze out some of his essence and absorb that level of comfort with, like, you know what, the world can be a difficult place, but you power through it and you do what you can for the people that you care about. Like, where does that come from?
I don't know. I think there's part of it is work ethic and a lack of a sense of entitlement. I just feel like the world doesn't owe me anything. My career doesn't owe me anything. No one's trying to upend me, and everyone's on their own track. That's why I have no jealousies of anyone else's success. Even at many years ago, because it has nothing to do with me. And so I just, you know, you're absorbing, you're taking in different elements of things that resonate with you, that help your soul, that rid you of any of the kind of the ugliness that we can sometimes hang on to.
Yeah.
And it's a process. And, you know, I mean, I think when I was in my 20s, starting out in my career, I was hustling and trying to figure out how to crack in. And I did have some, God, that guy, why does he work? Man, I am so much better than that guy, you know? And then you'd see someone, oh man, he's really good. Wow. I don't know if I'd ever be as good as that guy, you know? So you're really measuring yourself against someone else. And after a while, I got tired of it. And I just got rid of all that. and I don't do it. I don't read reviews. In fact, even in my social, I send out information that is important to me, and I welcome responses, even if they're nasty ones. It's like, that's okay. But I don't take it to heart. It doesn't affect me. I don't engage in a battle with anyone who has a different opinion. In fact, I welcome different opinions.
That level of comfort that you have with saying, you know, none of that stuff has anything to do with me, even when people are coming at me, that's a very strong, balanced sense of self. And I feel like that's a thing that people are always trying to find, the balance. How do we not be affected both negatively and positively by all the external things that happen in the world? How do we not personalize everything? How do we not take things to heart? And it just sounds like there's something innately about you where you just are able to disconnect yourself from it and go, you know, my self-worth and my sense of self, it just doesn't rely on the external world. I'm me and that's fine. And that's a gift, because that's a very hard thing to attain. It's a level of enlightenment, actually.
Well, it's not innate. It's something that came over time through maturity and aging and really truly assessing what's important and what's not. You know, the things that we thought were important 15, 20 years ago, you go, oh my God, why did I obsess over that thing? It's like, it's really not that important. Let it go. And so I've just taken that to heart on many other things. For example, anyone I talk to that says they're stressed out, and I said, well, what'd you do last night before? I eat, I wash up, I get ready for bed, I watch the news, I go, stop. That's the worst thing you can do.
Right before bed.
Yeah. You are preparing yourself for ease and sleep, and you are overstimulating. The news is the worst thing you can do before you go to bed. It implants ideas and suggestions like a hypnotist, and it puts it in there, and then it could aggravate the hell out of you and develop so much anxiety. It's just not good. So what I'm saying is that you need to assess yourself and know what's good for your soul and what is not, just like you assess what's good for my body. Do I want to put this in my body? I want to eat a chili cheeseburger at 2 o'clock in the morning? Is that what's going to be good?
Oh yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's exactly right. You're talking about like the sort of making the analogy of the, like, what's the emotional food that we're feeding ourselves? What's the soul food that we're feeding the soul food? What's the food for the soul that we're jamming in right before we go to bed? Yeah, my wife likes the TV on. She just likes the chatter of the TV to fall asleep.
Ooh.
I don't mind it, but the last few nights we've been falling asleep we just put on the old Forensic Files, the Peter Thomas narrated Forensic Files, and we watch a lot of the true crime shows, but with that one, you know, Peter Thomas, he's just that voice that's very synonymous with the kind of the announcer, you know, like he's just he's the guy that did the voice for the 9-9-9-19 song from the 80s, that guy that has the,
yeah.
And, but he does a bit of acting in this show. So like when they're recreating a murder in the show, he'll go, and then the assailant moved in, and then he struck him with a knife, and then he attacked. Like he gets, and so I found the last couple of nights, it's incorporating itself into my dreams, and I'm having the most stressful dream.
What? You're sounding like this is a surprise to you.
It's not surprising at all. I don't know why it's not, but
it
the point is, you're right.
Invade. I'm telling you, try something new instead of the chatter or the talking heads on news. Or reenactment of a murder.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Guys.
Yeah.
Light the candle, put on some spa music, contemplate, you know, I mean, it's just let it go. There's a time for everything.
Wait, though.
I'm telling you, it's going to make a difference.
Lydia really
loves
the
truth. Take a hot bath with Oprah.
That's what you need to do. Yeah. You need to. But it's not, again, it's not dirty. It's very friendly. It's a very friendly
bath.
It's not
dirty.
It's just a nice, like, oh, that's so no. And you're just having a conversation about your day.
It's a cleansing bath inside and out.
Yeah. Yes. It's really nice. But Lydia loves the true crime. I like them, but she loves the true crime shows. And I put on, just for a change the other night, I thought a series called Discover Ireland, where it's just like, there'll be rolling green hills and all sorts of castles. It was on for 2 minutes and she was like, you have to turn that off. There's a fucking piccolo in there. And that fucking piccolo, it was like a piccolo or something. And it just, she couldn't tolerate the piccolo, but the murder shows like put her right to sleep.
Wow.
Yeah.
Man, yeah. I don't know. I don't know if I could, I could cohabitate with that. Your wife and I would not be able to live together.
Shit. Well, I look, you know, not for anything. I was going to pitch wife swap, but if you know what, it's fine. I see that that's off the table now.
It wouldn't work. You're just going to have to make it work in your own marriage, my friend.
I was going to pitch a show, Celebrity Wife Swap. just sit with it in the dark. Or, you know, you could call it husband swap too. Either way, you know, it's like your partner is swapping out.
Yeah, oh my God.
I don't know. I think very few things would be surprising in 2020 anymore. And yet, you know, when you think about when people go, are we ever going to get through this? And I go, yeah, I mean, we will get through it. Humans are adaptive. We, you know, when you think about, the early part of the 20th century where you have World War I and then a horrendous flu epidemic, then you have a few years that are okay. Then the Great Depression hits for 10 years. And then on the heels of the Great Depression is World War II. So there's like 16 solid years where the world is in utter turmoil. And then even when the war is over, then there is a period where things have to rebuild and recover. So that's another hit. So, you know, you're talking about like two full decades more. And so, and people, you know, like people persevered. So I really do believe, I think the light at the end of the tunnel is that humans will adapt, you know, like we will make it through it. We do make it through.
You look at my father's generation, your grandfather's generation in World War II. This was a real threat to humanity. I mean, this was it, where you sucked it up and you had to go to battle. You had to fight for the existence of your country. I mean, my God. And we're complaining about wearing a mask.
Yeah.
That's your sacrifice. They don't compare.
Right.
And the other analogy I like to point out is that, okay, when I was a kid, the only seat belts we had was your mother's arm driving, because you're standing in the front of the bench seat, you know, a station wagon, and she would put her arm out there, and that was a seat belt.
Yeah.
So seat belts came in. When seat belts first came in, nobody wore them. Not doing it. Can't tell me what to do. And then they became a law. Not doing it. And then they got tickets for not wearing safety belts. And then after a while, you get used to it. And you realize, oh, this is the way it is. Now, there's not a car made that doesn't have an alarm if you're not wearing your safety belt.
Safety belt and airbags.
And airbags. So you get inside. If I'm getting in a car and I don't have my seatbelt on, it feels weird. It feels like I'm not quite ready yet.
It's terrifying. I don't know if you had this in driver's ed, and I'm sure they don't do this anymore. But when I had driver's ed in the 80s, they showed us all those like red asphalt, you know, like where you see actual crash films of people who didn't wear seatbelts that, I mean, it was traumatizing, like just people dead in their cars, like folded up in their cars. And that, I can't say I think that was a great tactic. I mean, I wear my seatbelt all the time though, but you only really have to be in one car accident where you're wearing your seatbelt and you realize, I don't know if I would have walked away from that if I hadn't had my seatbelt on.
Or you could have been severely damaged. Yeah. So the point is now they're talking about wearing masks as being an impingement on your freedom. And I say, well, what about your seatbelts? that was the same argument back in the day. And it's like, we know wearing a seatbelt will save lives. There's no possible way anyone can refute that.
Yeah, it doesn't matter what you believe. The truth of the matter is, seatbelt's going to save you if you're in a car accident.
It's just facts.
Yeah.
And the same thing with science on wearing the mask. It will save people from spreading the disease. No exceptions to that. That's science. And yet people are, no, I don't want to do it. It's an infringement of my personal rights and things like that. And it's like,
Can I just pitch you? I just want to pitch you a show idea. I want to pitch you another show. This is better, way better than Celebrity Wife Swap. You and Aaron Paul in the robot devices. You go around and find people not wearing masks, and you pull up to them and you just interview them and go, so why are you not? And then you just try to have a reasonable conversation with them about why they're not wearing masks.
I like it. It will be on Bravo or something. Nat Geo.
Yeah, it'll be on whatever's left of television after all.
Whatever is left of television. You know, and it will give you a mask and a bottle of Dos Hombres.
And a bottle of Dos Hombres. Yeah, drink this when you get home and where you can take the mask off. Go ahead.
Have you been drinking more since the pandemic?
No, I've been sober for 17 years. I don't drink at all.
Wow.
And I don't miss it. And there hasn't been one time during the pandemic where I thought, gosh, I'd really love to have a drink because I know it would make me feel worse.
Yeah.
So
I think of people who are in that position who struggle with that. And during the pandemic, I would wonder that it would be harder to reach out for that support to be able to hold on if you are tempted, and it's no great thing. I think challenges like these just exacerbate the current condition, in good or bad. A good marriage will get better through challenging times. A bad marriage will be exposed and fall apart.
Right.
And it's the same thing with addiction or anything like that. During this time, it's got to be really tough on those people who are struggling. Even if they don't have the disease, they're feeling the ramifications of the disease by sheltering. And that's not good for a lot.
Well, it's hard too, because if, you know, like my perception of a lot, you know, of a lot of drinking is, you know, you're just like numbing and you're trying to control your emotions, and you can do that if you take a drink or, you know, or any kind of addictive behavior. And so it's really trying to learn how to manage and be comfortable with feeling uncomfortable. No one ever wants to feel uncomfortable. In our society, like, we have a whole, you know, capitalist society built around trying to, you know, hey, don't feel uncomfortable. And so it's like, you know, again, I think it's a testament to these walks. It's like, well, that is a way, you know, like, being outside and sort of like getting pulled into the present and really been trying to focus on that. Like, well, in this moment, I am okay. My wife is okay. My mom is okay. Her mom is okay. Okay. That's what we have. I'm going to take that. And this moment is the win. And I'm just going to try to shove everything else out at the moment, you know, until I feel better later. And then I can kind of deal with that. So a lot of it's just sort of like, you know, like managing and navigating the emotions. But I've actually maybe not weirdly, but I've really appreciated my sobriety during this time because, and again, I don't throw shade at anybody who is dealing with this, however they deal with it. If people are drinking, fine. If they're not drinking, fine. But I am glad that with this Zoom, with this like video conferencing technology, my hope is that there are more group meeting options for people who need it in an instant that maybe can't in the old days, couldn't like wait to get to a meeting and have to drive to a meeting. It's now like maybe they can just drop into one that's happening on, you know, like on Zoom or something. So,
yeah,
you know, because when you think about it, we didn't really, this video conferencing thing, we didn't really use it that much before March. Like we had it, but it's not like, it wasn't like the video phones that, you know, we were promised from old sci-fi. And now it's like, it's just such a normal part of our culture now.
Well, you're going to see how it affects everything. You know, the commercial office space business is going to drop completely. And what used to be a fallback of video conferencing, I couldn't get my flight or whatever, so we'll have to video conference. It was always a fallback. Now it's a norm, and it's like it's so much easier. And the commute is so short for everybody. Just go to your table. The problem with that is that it's a facsimile of intimacy.
Right.
Is that I feel for the younger generation that don't see that don't go on dates in human exchange. They're basically doing what we're doing here and looking, oh, he's very nice or she's very nice or whatever the case is. And you're getting a sense of, oh yeah, we've seen each other several times. And like, how many times have you seen each other in person lately? Not often.
And it's right.
Like, wow, that's, yeah. what are we telling our souls? What are we telling ourselves of what is a natural relationship then if you're not actually in the same room with another person?
Yeah, it's connection, but without the human experience. Like we really did evolve to be around each other, to see each other in real time, like, to sort of be in this kind of chemical dance with the world, you know, and we are now kind of just making do with this kind of simulacra version of reality. However, I do think it is still preferable to, you know, 100 years ago when people just couldn't get news as fast or wasn't, you know, like, or couldn't share information. And then it's like, so it is a little bit of an exchange, but I feel like it is better this way. It's not perfect, but I feel like this is the best way for now, you know?
Yeah. And I miss, you know, we have an industry like the movie theater business that may just completely collapse under the pressure of this. And then my beloved theater, you know, like doing Broadway, the Broadway theater business is not being able to have that human experience like you talk about sitting in a room with 1,000 other people and experiencing something at the same moment. It's special, and it's, I have no idea when Broadway theater is going to be able to open back up to any great extent.
Yeah. I mean, I just keep holding out this hope that, you know, that things will begin to normalize somehow through some, maybe there's a vaccine that'll, you know, that'll stop it. And then we'll be able to, and I do think people will be, I do think my hope is that those businesses will bounce back quickly when that is a thing that people can do again, because people will so be craving that those experiences again. And I don't think it'll be like, you know, in 20 years, oh, back in the old days, you used to be able to go into a, you know, a theater and sit next to a person and, you know, people smelled horrible and, you know,
Is that an old man voice?
Yeah, it was the old man voice. Yeah, that was the old man voice.
Okay, that's good. Yeah,
yeah, back in those days. It's weird because it's sort of like a 20s old man. Oh, I don't know why I'm talking like this now, but this is this guy.
It also reminds me of that Western guy, a guy in the Western towns. You know, I went to the livery stable.
Here comes Billy the Kid. Oh, he's swinging! He's swinging both irons real hard. Here he comes. There's going to be a showdown. It's the old prospector, you know, with the big, fluffy white beard and the, you know, the big is kind of like the hat. Well, yeah, you can see my hat's kind of like fraying on the top here. He's got the frayed hat, and it's all dusty, and you know, gold. It's that guy.
Is that what you would have been in the old West? Is the old prospector guy?
Oh, old crazy prospector? Yeah. Well, I think I would have been, you know, that's a really great question. Who would I have been? It would have been a super nerdy, it would have been a super nerdy guy. Either would have played cards or chess or something, but had no physical or gun skills. I would have avoided, you know, physical confrontation at all costs. And I might have gone out to live to prospect for gold, where I would go slowly insane and then become the "it's a gold," you know.
I think I would have been the guy running the general store, wearing an apron, you know, and
yes, but who was also the weekend sheriff. I see you as the general store guy who's like, you know what, our sheriff got shot, but it's not a, it's a thankless job, but I'll do it because it needs to be done. I see you as general store proprietor and weekend sheriff.
There's no fucking way I would be a weekend sheriff. That guy always gets killed in every story. The weekend sheriff.
But not you. You're Brian Cranston. You're Sheriff Brian Cranston.
Please. You wanted me to die.
Oh. Well, that's because I want to get to your gold. You got some gold in that general store.
Check his feeling there. Oh, my God.
Hold a mirror up to his mouth. He's not breathing, I tell you.
Yep.
Yeah, there was one actor who always played that old prospector type when I was growing up, and it was like that's the guy that's in my head. You know, it's just
Ish. Yeah. Well, I forget his name too, but I remember seeing him.
He always talks like this. He always talks like this. Everything's like,
Do you think people would be upset if we did the whole, if we started the podcast over and just did it that way? Brad, I understand you had the COVID-19.
Well, I did have that COVID. I did. And I shed it.
I had body ache, something terrible.
It was fierce.
No gold, though. I was hoping I'd poop gold. Didn't poop any gold. Yeah. Always looking for gold.
And now we briefly pause to thank our sponsor for this episode of the ID10T podcast. MacWeldon.com is premium men's essentials and clothing. And I have to say, I am thrilled that they are sponsoring the podcast now, because I've been a customer of theirs for quite a while. The most comfortable sweatpants that I own came from MacWeldon, and I bought them in like 4 colors. And also, they're nice enough that you could like wear them out. They don't just look like home pants. You can wear them out in public. They're so incredibly comfortable. And they have these Sunday lounge pants that are like flannel. And they look snazzy, but they have a drawstring, so they're super comfortable. Anyway, all of their stuff, they have really great blank undershirts. They have socks, underwear that's really comfortable. So I highly, 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 highly recommend Mack Weldon, either for yourself or if you're looking for a stocking stuffer for this holiday season. If you go to MackWeldon.com/ID10T, you're going to enter the promo code ID10T and get 20% off your first order. Again, 20% off your first order if you go to MackWeldon.com/ID10T and use the promo code ID10T. Also, they have a loyalty program called Weldon Blue. Level 1 gets you free shipping for life. And once you reach level 2 by spending $200, MacWeldon is going to give you 20% off every order for the next year. So, MackWeldon.com/ID10T. Use the offer code ID10T. Thank you to MacWeldon for sponsoring this episode of the ID10T podcast, which we now return to.
I did want to ask you, by the way, as we were sort of talking about earlier, how is the mezcal business, the Dos Hombres business, going?
God, it's going unbelievably well. This came out of left field for me. About 3 years ago, I was having dinner with Aaron in New York, and we hadn't seen each other. Breaking Bad had already been off the air for 3 years or so. And we used to see each other every day. And we worked together so closely, and we'd become really, really good friends. And we were lamenting the fact that we didn't get a chance to see each other very much anymore. And he said, you know, what we ought to do is go into the mezcal business. And I laughed, because that's got to be a joke. And he was serious. And I went, what are you talking about, mezcal business? And he said, no, it's so great. It's an old spirit, and it's been around for ages, but not many people really know about the mezcal business or mezcals in general. So we went to a mezcal bar, and I said, okay, I'll try it. And I just fell in love with it. It was just not what I remembered as a kid, with a little worm at the bottom of the bottle. And it was just, It smelled like antiseptic, something you'd clean your kitchen tabletops with. And that's what you're supposed to drink. And it was like, ugh. But this was just amazing tasting. And so I said, well, let's go down to Oaxaca. Let's spend a week. Let's taste some. If we find something we both love, let's try it. But if we don't, let's just not do it. And that was the agreement. And I didn't think we were going to find it. I thought we were just like having a cool week-long vacation down in Oaxaca. And because he likes a real strong scotch, you know, it'll burn down your lungs kind of scotch.
Right.
I like to be seduced with my art, and the art of spirits is no different. I want to be invited in. I want to be curious about something and slowly be introduced to it. And so I don't want something that slaps me in the face, whether that's music or art or architecture or spirits or food. I don't want to.
Or getting slapped in the face too. Like getting slapped in the face is also
getting slapped in the face.
Yeah.
And so it was our last day that we were there, and we were at a little town called San Luis del Rio. There's only 400 people in this little town. It's beautiful. They've got one landline telephone, no cell service. It's about 3-hour drive from Oaxaca City, which is already very small. And the last hour is a switchback up a mountainous road, dirt road, to get to this little town. It's not easy. But yet we met a guy there named Gregorio Velasco, who has since become our partner in it. And he is the maestro, the mezcalero, and he makes this beautiful spirit. And it appealed to both of us. So we went into it, and we're loving the business. We're done really well. I'm not sure exactly the number. I think it's like 140 different brands of mezcal.
Oh, wow.
And yet we're now number 12 in a little over a year.
Holy shit.
We're in Total Wine, we're in BevMo, we're in ABC Liquors, we're all over the country. And we're just growing like crazy. And it's because of this spirit is so tasty. It goes well with any fruit juice because right where our palenque is in this little town, this mountainous town, are mango trees and banana trees. And so the cross-pollination that the bees give us and the bats give us are these beautiful fruits, and that you could taste that in the mezcal. And it's just, we're having a great time. And so we're continuing on and growing the company, and it's a lot of fun.
Is it a hacky joke to suggest that you got, even as I'm about to say this out loud, I'm like, don't say this. This is the stupidest joke. You and Aaron making the mezcal in a Fleetwood Bounder RV. Listen, I'm just throwing it out there just to give some of the fans. I can already tell this was a bad idea. I can tell you're being very kind. Not all bits of gold, hard and spicy gold.
It's funny because when we first saw this palenque, which is their word for the little processing plant, and it's very rural. Our Dos Hombres is artisanal, which means, and we can't put it on the bottle unless it is, we cannot have any modern technology in the processing of our product.
Oh, is that what that means? I actually never knew what that meant.
Yeah. And I mean, we have donkeys on our bottle label because donkeys play an important role in this. There is no electricity at our palenque where we produce Dos Hombres. There's running water in the stream next to it, and that's where we get our fresh mountain water. But the only two ingredients in Dos Hombres is smoked chunks of agave that are mashed down and obviously fermented, then distilled, and water. It's agave and water, and that's it. And we have, it's a natural process. It's when we first saw the palenque, He said, it's across the river. So we had to take off our boots and hike up our pants and cross the river. And then the guy who was leading this this party, I guess, this search party for the Palenque, had a machete, and he was hacking all this vegetation down so that we can get through in this little pathway. And when it came into a clearing, Aaron stopped and went, shit, this is just like a meth lab. I mean, it looked like a little ad hoc meth lab that popped up in the middle of the jungle. And it was like, oh my God, it does. It's just
art imitates life. Life imitates art.
That's right.
But this is legal, at least. This is it's a legal chemical process.
It's a legal chemical process. It's a beautiful spirit. You know, most people are familiar with tequila. Tequila is a mezcal, but a mezcal is not a tequila.
Got it.
So what happened is about 100 years ago, mezcaleros from all through Mexico were making mezcal out of any agave. That's what mezcal is.
Okay.
A spirit native from agave. Well, in this one region, they were making their mezcal out of the blue agave, the big leafed, big, huge piñas that you get from this massive, the biggest agave that's grown. And so the yield is far greater. So the other mezcaleros were saying, this is really not fair for you to call that mezcal when you're, because they can make so much more and they can undercut prices and things like that. So the government stepped in and said, okay, you guys can continue making your mezcal, but you have to do two things. You have to only make it from the blue agave only, and you have to change the name. And you cannot call it a mezcal anymore. You have to call it something else.
Okay.
And so because the biggest city that they were making this blue agave mezcal was from was called Tequila, they called their mezcal Tequila. And that's why it's a difference.
I had no idea.
Yeah. Today, most tequila is done in a processing plant that they manufacture this so fast. Instead of smoking their mezcal, they steam it. They put it in a big silo. They really truncate the process. There's still some tequila makers that do it the old-fashioned way, but few and far between.
And are you ever going to manufacture any that has chunks of gold in it? That was the last time I wanted to do that bit. That was the last one? Time, Brian.
I don't think it's going to be the last time.
Shit. Not in my life, but maybe in this podcast. But who knows? You know, I'm unpredictable. But this idea, like even just hearing you describe that, all I can think about is like, there's Brian Cranston in his old West general store selling this like this handmade mezcal.
That's right. Well, to try some, let me give you a ladle full. Put it in a mason jar or a ball jar. There you are.
I mean,
seal it up good.
I'm telling you, man, listen, I know the old West was rough, but there are certain elements of like the simpler time where it's just like, you know, you walked across the street to your store. Your town was a main street. Maybe you had some farmland like it. Those simple things, like they just feel very refreshing, even though I know it was a much more violent time to live. Like it's still
violent. And also, if you got the measles, you die.
Oh, yes. Dave Chappelle used to have this bit about like I'm not going to do it justice, so I won't do the bit. But it was just basically like if you got diarrhea in the 1800s, you probably were going to die. And it was like, what happened? I got diarrhea. It's like, oh, yeah, you could just get diarrhea and they fucking kill you.
It was like, take it to the old man. You know, your old man gold prospector guy?
Yeah, yeah.
He's the old man. He's probably mid-40s.
Yeah. But he looks 100. Yeah. And he's the one just like, guy. But he also smears like, let me crush up a bee's nest. I'll put that in some mud. I'll smear that in your eyes and you'll be set. You'll be fine. And of course, none of it worked. And then everyone got sicker, you know, because they just didn't understand medicine. Yeah. Okay. So it's not it wasn't maybe not the best time to live, but
it's not the best time to live. No.
But there is a romantic idea of just sort of living on a, you know, living on a farm or a ranch and running a local business and not, you know, not being weighed down by any more than that.
There is. I think the more anxiety that we feel in our present day life, and in a good way, I think COVID has created this. You discovered the simple beauty of a walk.
Yeah.
I mean, there's something to be said for that. It's like, oh, okay. Yeah. Just go for a walk. Just take a pause. We were forced to stay home. A lot of families like, well, let's put a puzzle together. And it's like, oh, you know, this was kind of fun. And simple things like that we've forgotten because we're so damn busy because we think our lives are so important or more valuable the busier we are.
Well, we're distracted, like so much of our lives, I feel like before we're distracting ourselves from dealing with real stress and anxiety, but we just get into this momentum where we just go, 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 go. And then you don't ever have to stop to breathe or deal with stuff. And of course, that doesn't fix anything. It just delays while things compound. And so just the idea of like having to stop, take a breath, and, you know, as horrible as the situation is, these are the cards we're dealt right now. So what can we do? We can take walks, we can take responsibility, we can appreciate what we have, we can live in the moment, we can appreciate the people that are close to us. And you know,
with me, I took a bath with Oprah. So that's how I relax.
That's your yippity gold bit. You keep going back. I keep going back to we each have a tent pole callback.
And a running gag.
I love it. Oh, by the way, I was just reading I don't know if you saw this, but there was an artist on Instagram who imagined you as Dr. Doom. And it kind of blew up the internet a little bit. And people were like, oh my God, Cranston would be a fucking amazing Dr. Doom. I wish I could send you the picture of it because it looks really cool.
I'll try to figure out how to
wedge you into the Marvel universe.
I have never the closest I've done to that kind of thing was I did a thing on the Power Rangers a couple of years ago.
Oh yeah, I saw that. Yes, of course, you were the computer.
I was the computer, and that was the weirdest thing because when I was shooting it, they had a chin harness for me because in order to do the visual effects, I had to actually place my chin and not move it. So everything I was doing was talking like this and looking straight forward. So as the face would move from place to place, but I couldn't move my face. And it was the weirdest thing just to put your head in a device that kind of froze you in a position. And then they painted that out, of course.
Acting in the 21st century.
The strangest thing. But the Marvel Universe is actually, I would love to do something unique like that. And Dr. Doom, huh?
Yeah, it's really cool. Whether it's Dr. Doom or anything else, or maybe it's the DC universe, I don't know. But I just feel like, you know, as again, one of the first things you said to me the first time you were on the podcast was I retained a lot of it, was about how like I never like to repeat. I always like to do something different. I like to go in different directions, explore different things. And I just feel like the superhero universe, there's something out there for you because those roles really light up. When you put an amazing actor in like a cool superhero or sci-fi thing, it just elevates it to another level. So I hope you're open to it. Maybe it'll generate some, you know, maybe some studio had to be like, get Cranston on the phone. Let's get him in here. Oh, that's the old guy. Sorry. I have a very limited bag of characters. Prospector and old guy, and they're both pretty similar cousins.
That's right.
Don't you tell me about gold. Get off here. There's no gold here. I'm tired of your attitude.
That second guy has to have a cigar, right?
Yeah, of course he has a cigar. Yeah, of course he has a cigar. He has a cigar and he eats steak for breakfast. He's just like, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Bades and whiskey.
I'll have to look that up, Dr. Doom. I'll have to see what that looks like if someone is promoting that. But yeah, I'd like to do something new and different like that. And of course, the challenge in that, because those films are all very broad stroked characterizations and plot heavy, right? It's like, this is going to happen and you got to stop this guy from doing that or else this will be the result, you know?
Yeah.
So how do you then carve out a memorable character within the confines of that structure.
It's that's backstory. Like if you remember, you know, the original X-Men from 2000 was so revolutionary for superhero films because the human, the villains were humanized. Like you saw Magneto was the reason that he had this worldview is because of extreme trauma as a child. And so you understood, oh, he's going about it in a fucked up way, but you can see why being traumatized in the way that he was, like it gave the character depth more than just, I'm going to create chaos, you know? Again, well, it just was right in the middle of those two other characters.
your evil character.
There's not a lot of range there. It's they're all the same. They're all brothers, but and so I feel like, you know, if the right role presented itself and you were able to give it the right backstory with the right depth and the right, I think it would be. Are you at the point in your career where you could call your agent and go, "Give me a superhero movie," and they go, "Okay," and then they just start fishing around and see what's out there? Do you get to do that, or do you just kind of wait to see what comes in?
Even your impersonation of me, give me a superhero movie.
Right. That limited bag of tricks. Yeah, that guy. Right. So this guy used to run a studio, but then all the studios were crumbling. So then he became an agent. I used to run the biggest studio in this town. Now, Krantz, I'm going to get you a superhero role. Yeah.
Kind of. Yeah. I don't like to usually work from the outside in, meaning, like, I want to find this, so then look for that. I usually find my characters organically in the sense that someone's passion wrote a story that I see the character is there, and I'm leaning into it, and it grew naturally out of someone's real, true interest in writing something. And that doesn't mean that it can't be a superhero universe. I certainly would be open to that, but I'm not interested in doing, you know, a character that's been done before, really. And you know, he'd be the 17th Commissioner Gordon, you know. And it's like, right. I'm not interested. I'm open to it, but we'll see. I've got a lot of things on my plate now, and we're doing Your Honor down here, and that'll be on Showtime in December.
It looks great, by the way. It looks it looks like one of those shows, you know. It's sort of like there's definitely like a chess game going, not literal chess, but there's definitely a chess game, and it looks like there's a lot of like fucked up turns where you just are like, oh my God, and just people making not great decisions and then having to cover up and deal with the consequences of those decisions, which are always the most stressful. So riddled with that.
It is that the premise is that my son was involved in an accident, a car accident.
And you're a judge.
I'm a judge. And my son panicked and left the scene of the accident, and in his panic and haste, he realized, oh, he's made a huge mistake. When I get home and I hear the story and he tells me what happened, I say, well, you have to do the right thing. That you will forever have a scarred soul if you don't take responsibility for your actions. So I convince him that we need to turn himself in to the police and get representation and plead to the judge. Look, he's never had a problem. He turned himself in. He made a mistake. He's underage, you know, and hope for the best. And we go to the police station, and at the police station, we discover that the kid that he actually hit on a motorcycle died, and that his parents, the father of the kid, is a notorious gangster, a badass guy.
Like an Al Capone style, like old timey.
Or even like a John Gotti kind of, You don't fuck with him.
It's like a crime family. Basically, you kill someone like the kid of the head of a crime family.
Yeah. So once my character realizes who the victim was, I knew instantly it doesn't matter that my son made a mistake. It doesn't matter even if it was his fault or not. It's not going to be good for him. This guy is going to kill my son regardless. So at that moment, he pulls back and he concocts, alibis and destroys evidence.
Forget what I said before. Forget what I said. But you said,
yeah. It's exactly right. Yeah. Yeah. He said, no, Dad, you're right. We have to.
I wasn't feeling well. I was very tired. What I meant to say was, don't ever fucking tell anybody.
Yeah. So that's the premise, is that what would you do to save the life of your child? And any parent would say, I would do anything to save the life of my child. And it's like, yeah, well, that's what this guy is facing. And so, oh God,
those are the best. And it's like, any time where as the audience, you can kind of, you pose that question to the audience, what would you do in this fucked up series of circumstances? That's why, one of the reasons why the premise of Breaking Bad was so amazing. What would you do in this situation? The premise of this show, what would you do? I think it's why Walking Dead was so, what would you do in this situation, rather than just having, like one dimensional characters who do what you expect them to do. There is that human, like under these stressors and circumstances, there's no real win. It's all that kind of Pyrrhic victory of like any win is a bloody victory somehow.
That's right. There's consequences no matter what you, and basically it's whenever a character or a person in our real lives, if we try to become someone we're really not, it's not going to end well.
Right.
Because you're faking it. You're faking your way through life and you just can't sustain that. And so that's what happens in this story. And that's what's, stories all together. I think writers now and audiences are far more sophisticated now than they were when I was young. You could throw up anything on television or film and it's like, oh, okay. And you watch it and some bad, Murder, She Wrote and all those terrible TV shows of days gone past.
Still watch Murder, She Wrote. Still convinced Jessica Fletcher is the murderer. You can't have that many deaths in a small town in Maine.
Yes.
The whole series of Murder, She Wrote is Jessica Fletcher reimagining all of the murders and pinning them on other people. I'm convinced she's rotting in a padded cell somewhere.
That I would love to see. That's the story I want to see.
It's just like, and then you just see like she's in the cell and you see her doctor is Tom Bosley and William Catt is that. It's like all the people in her life, she's cast them in the roles of murderers.
That's fantastic. I love that idea.
Yeah, well, I don't know if Angela Lansbury's ever going to go along with it, but if I ever run into her, I'll pitch it.
Angie. Baby.
Angie, listen, you've done Jessica Fletcher as the crime solving. Yeah. This is edgy. We need edgy Murder, She Wrote.
What happened to your old time crusty cigar chomping agent?
Oh, this was his assistant that took him over. He got him fired and he took over. He's living in the now, man. Come on. Come on, Angie, baby. Yeah, it's like, I feel like all my characters... You know what? All my characters are actually like of a decade. The old timey prospector is 1880s. This guy's like 40s. And then, come on, baby. He's the stockbroker. He's the guy that gets shot in Die Hard. Hans, baby. Come on. Yeah. We can blam. He's that guy.
So you have no contemporary characters whatsoever.
No, it stops at around 87. Yeah, it stops around 87.
Kind of sad.
I got nothing. I would do well in very specific period pieces. Very, very specific. That's about it. Look, man, I love you to pieces. It's so good to see your face. I am so goddamn happy. I did not know that you had COVID, and I'm so glad that you're one of the lucky ones to able to get through and that you and your wife are okay. And happy you're working and And I'm delighted that in the midst of a power outage, you somehow, this is the Bryan Cranston that I know. You still did a fucking podcast. You still have set up portable lights and you had a little Mophie pack and you're powering your phone. And I just, man, every time I get to see you, I just love you more and more. I really appreciate it.
Oh, Chris, I appreciate it. Yeah, I've known you a long time now, and I always enjoy talking to you, and especially your prospecting old man.
Well, you know, I think there's a lot of gold in this podcast, Mr. Cranston. I think one of them gold is having a nice friendly bath with Oprah. It's bath time with Oprah.
There is ready to go. And so it shall be.
And so it shall be. Well, the end, as we drift off into the sunset. Hey, that gold over there, I don't know.
ID10T scanning complete. Enjoy your burrito.